What? Have I been to the Seelie Court? What makes you ask that question? Oh. Yeah. Yeah, I've been. I didn't like it. I don't do well in situations requiring high etiquette like that. I mean, on the streets, sure, but not with a bunch of thousand-year-old elites. They're worse than the corpse are in a lot of ways. The Fey Realm itself isn't so bad, though. If you ever make it to the other side, there's Boggles and Boggins and Gretch that know how to have a good time. Unseelie? Gowan, where'd you hear that from? Oh. Well, funny you should mention that. There's nothing I can share at the moment, but yeah, I'm working something out. The Unseelie have been good partners in the past. I think we can help them out in return. Coming to you straight from the most reliably biased source on the Matrix, broadcasting as a proud member of the Shadowcasters Network, I am Opti, and welcome to the Neo-Anarchist Podcast. The saga of the Sixth World has continued here, little crows. We are creeping up on current events now, and many of you may remember when they happened, although doubtfully with fondness. But first, as always, I'd like to give a piece of myself and my mind in this segment we call Dear Opti. First off comes from Bickle. Ni hao, my name is Bickle, and thanks for the line. Anyway, I've been listening to a few of your reports and wanted to let you know that you're doing good work, about 80% of the time. Now, don't get me wrong, Crow, you're not doing bad or spreading lies intentionally or anything, but you're leaving out quite a bit, especially when it comes to the seedy underbelly of our line of work. Is this guy for real? How come I never hear you mention anything about the mole people? And what about Arleesh and her dragon bug hybrid experiments? You can't tell me that you don't know anything about the cover-up on Mars, either. You've got a good voice and a powerful word, oh my. Why don't you speak out against the real enemies a bit more? Anyway, expect to hear from me again before too long. Maybe I'll drop you some important rules you can share with your audience. Bickle. Well, Bickle, you've been speaking to Plan 9/10 recently? I can honestly say that I don't know anything about the mole people, but you have sparked my curiosity. And as far as Arleesh and her dragon bug hybrids, you got the wrong dragon. Check closer to North America for that dirt. And regarding the cover-up on Mars, I think I've gave my 2 cents on that, repeatedly. Anyway, thanks for listening, I guess, and I'll keep looking. This next one comes from Tessa. I just love it when you sing the hits with a Shadowrunner-y twist. I was wondering if you've got a favorite song. Mine is Faithfully for a Fee. Aw. Thanks so much, from Tessa. Well, thanks for the encouraging words, Tessa. I actually think that my favorite cover song is still We Didn't Start the Fire, because there's just so much history there. But also Citizen Hypocrite remains high up there, even if it's not a cover tune. Well, stay tuned, though. I have one coming up that might be my new favorite, and hopefully yours, too. The last one has come from Monchito Valderrama. Since the Year of the Comet, I got myself a fancy new pair of feather arms and a horn, but this sweet deal came with a little rage problem. As you can imagine, this sometimes gets me in trouble, since I handle all the health-related issues. Any advice you can give me or my team to help me control this, old chummer? From Monchito Valderrama. Oh, wow, chummer. Surge isn't really my specialty. I don't think a lot of people really understand what the effects of the comet really were. And on the surface, there was a bunch of people that got new powers or abilities or problems. But really, what was happening was the mana levels getting artificially high, so awakened DNA was manifesting in unstable conditions. It's likely that somewhere in your ancestry you have heritage of horned metahumans and maybe even feathered ones, but also that those are making you unstable. Now, I would never tell anyone that they were a mistake, genetics are what they are, but gene therapy is making a lot of strides, and I'm not sure uncontrolled aggression is always going to be helpful. So maybe see a DNA therapist? Anyway, I have a great deal of sympathy for those that surged, but I'm glad it doesn't happen anymore, for all of our sakes. Well, keep those questions coming in. You can get them to me on the Face Matrix tweet box or shoot me a message at opti@neo-anarchist.com, and I will make your lives enhanced by answering them. Now, join me as we head back into the mystery of history. And I'm going to combine a few categories for this episode because the dragons just won't stay out of world news in 2073. So without further ado, here's the geopolitics of that year, aka how dragons suck all the time. The tension between Aztlan and Amazonia continued to rise in the years leading up to 2073, especially in their fighting over Bogota. Amazonia fought to save the rainforest itself and all the life within it, Of course, once they were done talking, their overzealousness led to stealing homes and killing those who opposed them, even civilians. The two powers launched multimedia attack campaigns at each other worldwide in an attempt to gain the international consensus on their side. But then things got downright apocalyptic. On January 18th, the great dragon Sarurg, often called the Destroyer, and for good reason, resurfaced and led an attack, or more accurately, a slaughter, against an Aztlaner military base in the Colombian city of Cali. His strike force was made up of 6 feathered serpents, around 12 wyverns, and a horde of drake spirits, lindworms, terrorists from the group known as Green War, and various mercenaries sympathetic to his rage. He laid waste to the entire area for 3 hours, massacring 5,000 soldiers, including those that attempted to surrender. To take things from bloody to biblical as a flourish, Sarurg swooped over the business district in Cali and launched a furious magical attack, which caused anyone caught in its radius to perish from whatever genetic or physical ailment they were predisposed to. 10,000 civilians were killed, Crows, including infants, children, and many non-Aztlaner citizens. Following the attack, Amazonian forces occupied the city, cutting Aztlan off. Now you know I'm no fan of Aztlan. But when you kill that many, when you kill infants and children, and... Anyway. Just months later in March, Sarurg strikes again, this time in Managua, killing hundreds of metahumans, this time laborers and farmers. Many of these deaths were caught on camera and played up by international news outlets at the urging of Aztlan, causing public opinion to turn rapidly against dragons in general. And when I say public opinion, I mean literally everyone from Humanus to the Sons of Sauron were calling for dragons' blood. The world gets more than it wanted of the war months later when neo-anarchists hack a spy satellite and release classified images of the Aztlan-Amazonia war to the public, causing outrage. Reacting to the immense public pressure and attempting to mitigate the fallout, the Orange Queen, the great dragon Hestiby, gave a speech to the United Nations General Assembly. In it, she condemned Sarurg's actions, even while she explained that they were as a result of Aztlan executing Xibalchan in 2064. Further, she urged the UN War Crimes Tribunal to bring charges against Sarurg. In saying these things, Hestiby broke a number of Dragonkind's most sacred traditions. First, she aired the dirty laundry between dragons in front of mortals. Second, she was seen as choosing metahumanity over Dragonkind in a dispute, which is also a dragon no-no. Inter-dragon conflicts are traditionally done only amongst themselves, and they are supposed to present a unified front to the rest of the world. Now, I actually appreciate what the Orange Queen did here. She saw the writing on the wall, and at great risk to herself, she did the right thing for metahumanity, so credit where credit's due. Unfortunately, her kind didn't see it that way. While she advocated for leniency for Sarurg, it was unlikely that the UN would have any for crimes so heinous. The opening salvo of retribution against Hestiby was carried out even as she closed her remarks to the assembly. The founder of the Shasta Shamans, Elliot Eyes of Worm, was one of Hestivy's closest friends, and he was assassinated on Mount Shasta just as she concluded her speech. Hestiby was enraged, and on July 30th, she lashed out against the great dragon Lofir in retaliation for the assassination. She destroyed Lofir's Sodderkrupp headquarters in the Middle East, which looked berserk from the footage, but she managed not to kill a soul. Of course, this really punched Sodderkrupp in the gut. It opened up the Middle East for Global Sandstorm and others to gain ground due to lack of confidence in SK and fear of collateral damage from the Dragon's Civil War. Now, along the way, Lofir accused Kelladir of aiding Hestiby by intercepting SK communications in Great Britain. It wasn't long before the UN made its move to indict Sarurg for war crimes. In Geneva, on August 10th, Sarurg became internationally wanted. Oh, and it gets worse from here, Crows. But that action happens in the following year. And like I said, the dragons dominate 2073, even the ones not directly involved in the bigger disputes. Now, many of you will recall that in 2061, the great dragon Ghostwalker popped out of the Astral Rift in DC, that same hole that was created when Big D bit the big one. Since then, the UCAS government has been watching over the rift and had constructed the Watergate bunker to contain it. Well, on July 18th, in response to a bunch of really amped up magic and artifact mumbo-jumbo that I can't spend time dealing with in this episode, the great dragons Ghostwalker, Aiden, and Hestiby, along with former Tyr princes Lou Surehand, Aeron the Scribe, and Jonathan Reed, and along with Anna Dupree and the ridiculous Harlequin, gathered in the bunker around the rift. Ghostwalker performed a ritual there that shut the rift for good by flying directly into it and disappearing. Unfortunately for everyone else, the feedback from the ritual was as powerful as a nuclear weapon. The bunker collapsed, 600 civilians were killed, almost 2,000 more were injured, and around 350 were still missing, believed pulled into the rift. It would have been far worse if Ana Dupree had not worked magic to blunt the impact, killing herself in the process. The other participants survived, however, due to their own powerful magics. UCAS President Angela Colleton claimed government agencies were responsible for closing the rift, and when pressed, those who care to involve themselves in such conspiracy talk blamed the Black Lodge for the deaths. Well, of course, officially, DC police simply said the commotion was due to odd weather. Before her death, Ana had been the acting chairperson of the Draco Foundation since Nadia Daviar had gone missing. After Ana died, Nadia reappeared just as mysteriously as she had gone, taking control of the Draco Foundation once more. On August 1st, at the first meeting of the board following Ana's death and Nadia's return, the board accepted the resignations of both Midori Kamatetsu and Manuel Torres as trustees, most likely due to practices Nadia found distasteful. Over in Chiratarangira, High Prince Larry Zinkin was delivered requests to clarify Hestabee's status as a Prince of the Tear, but he continued to blow off the actions of all former princes, saying that they are of no concern to him. Lies, of course, but good for him for saying so. Over in Seattle, Governor Kenneth Brackhaven kicked off his 2074 re-election campaign with a rally at the Space Needle. A group of pro-Orc Underground supporters interrupted him briefly in support of Proposition 23, which would make the Orc Underground an official district of Seattle. Of course, he blew them off. Not too much later, on November 5th, Brackhaven's press secretary scammed over $50 million from the city workers' retirement fund and fled town, which, of course, didn't hurt Brackhaven at all. Nothing ever seems to hurt him. That guy can say the most racist dreck ever, get caught lying, cheating, and stealing, and still his supporters are rabidly loyal, and he keeps getting elected. It's madness, I tell you. Worldwide, 2073 sees the world getting that much worse when 3,000 technomancers go missing, along with 40 AI. Of course, that seems like a small number worldwide, but given the number of actual technomancers and AI there are in the world, it became clear that someone was targeting them, and the world just didn't care at all. In the AGS, the trolls of the Black Forest restructured themselves to go from the Black Forest Troll Kingdom to the Black Forest Troll Republic. Of course, that seems very forward for them, but in reality, they lost their king, and it was easier to elect a new leader than to tear the place apart trying to get a new king while others were trying to force their will on the trolls. Make no mistake, no one in power likes the Black Forest, but these trolls have made one hell of a go in nation building. Magic also saw some up and downs in 2073. For example, in Las Vegas, a rain of what seemed to be blood poured down on the city. Of course, it wasn't real blood. It was a geological anomaly that had been happening for centuries. But this was magical, and it was caused by angry spirits, since Horizon was doing experimentations on them in the area. Of course, prior to this, Horizon had been seen as the good guy AAA Corp. But after this, and after it came out that they were responsible for the kidnapping and the experimenting on the technomancers, oh, did I forget to mention that? Silly me. Horizon has been revealed to be just another power that be. Fraggin' fraggers. Also this year, people began to notice that those infected with the HMHVV virus were subtly changing, and sometimes not so subtly changing. More feral activity, increased sensitivity to sunlight, rejection of cyberware, all noticed among the infected. But all the news wasn't bad. In 2073, the Seattle Seahawks admitted the first Sasquatch, Ahote, into the NFL. Some of you old mages might appreciate this, but in February, Dr. Iordane Whitman released his journal article regarding the decline of grounding, in which he explained that the magical technique known as grounding was no longer viable. Grounding, for those youngsters among you, was the ability to transmit physical spells through dual-natured bridges between physical and astral space. In other words, mages used to be able to cast spells through active foci, even someone else's. It was terribly powerful and annoying, but it no longer works. Hadn't worked since 2068, according to Whitman. The prevailing theory, according to the paper, is that the veil between the astral plane and our own was weaker during the early part of the awakening, and has been gradually growing stronger and more stable. It's also possible that the astral plane itself was not strong enough to prevent the formation or of larger or less stable spells, but either way, the point is, it doesn't work anymore. Speaking of working, I'm done working just so you could waste another entirely good slot of time listening to the Neo-Anarchist Podcast. In closing, I want to give a hearty hello to our newest Patreon supporters, which receive monthly offerings of Neo-Anarchist Street gear. Freshly included in this illustrious list of capable crowdfunders is Ryan Maloney, David Blank, Joshua Jackson, Brad Bergwart, Gray, Jinx, Brian McGinnis, Jacob Kalb, Matthew Tracy, Gerard Krause, Brent Weichel, Shelser, Brandon, Kristen Domke, Christian Boggs, Jim, and Stephen Bull Ratkovich. Thank you all very much. Everything that you need to set up and maintain neo-anarchist cells in your area, which includes new stickers every month, patches, pins, dice bags, fake sins, contact sheets for Opti and his crew, USB cred sticks, Black Star t-shirts, whiskey glasses, temporary tattoos, Black Star dog tags, and an upcoming album of Sixth World Musical Malarkey will be delivered to your safe house as we march bravely on. The music serving as the background to Audible Anarchy was written by the legend Marshall Parker and reimagined by Unanimium 88. This was the Neo Anarchist Podcast, and I am your host, the gutter rat, check the fact, welcome Matt, getting fat, hep cat, sweet hat, better than that host, Opti. Enjoy your freedom, because dragons...